Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Mully and Hall. Up early to start your day with Chicago sports talk.
We go ham.
Time to catch you up on this morning's show so far.
We got there for Billy Currington because I do like Billy Currington. Guy's great. Beer is good. People are crazy. That's his signature song. I'm just telling you that because I know you don't know that.
So I appreciate it.
Billy Currington was actually better.
God is great. People are good.
No. Beer is good.
God is great. Beer is good.
People are crazy.
Did you wear your Lightning McQueen t-shirt?
No, I did not.
That song is featured in Cars.
All you know about Rascal Flatts could be reduced to
one song.
Cars,
that's it. One
Cars,
song.
The Cars movie, the soundtrack.
I didn't know that Rascal Flatts is like Lynyrd Skynyrd. I thought it was one person.
You have so much to learn about country music.
Mully and Hall.
I think they're kind of kindred spirits in a sense.
Taking you to work every morning from 5 to 9.
Whoever doesn't like you is going to make this a statement on his career. But the fact of the matter is, there's no reversing that decision. That decision was made. Yu Darvish is going to be here.
Right.
He's going to be here for a while. He's going to be paid for a while anyway. It's a danger to put too much on one outing.
Well, and I think that's wise, and I think that's a really good way to look at it. Because when you look at Darvish versus Arrieta, you are looking at the way that a lot of Cubs fans, either or, he's replacing Arrieta. When in fact, I don't know if the Cubs erred in letting Arrieta go as much as in the way they replaced him.
Mully and Hall.
It's a hell of a team.
On 670 The Score.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. It is May 20th, it's a Monday in Chicago, and it's a significant day because this is Lori Lightfoot's first day as mayor of Chicago. There'll be a ceremony later this morning, and they will Rahm will hand over the administration, the keys to the city to Mayor-elect Lightfoot, and she will now establish her own government. She's already put together. It's been a 6-week battle to get everything together, and they take over and
passing the torch. Yeah,
then she'll be on the fifth floor at City Hall. And
she will be.
Mayor Emanuel is out, and it was interesting, David, because today in the Chicago Tribune, you have your Q&A with Rahm Emanuel. You had a sit down with him. Tell us about this story and
Friday afternoon. I sat down with Mayor Emanuel in his office.
Cool.
The invitation was granted, or the invitation came after, we talked about it. I did his podcast about a month and a half ago or something. And I kidded with him. I said, well, now you can, we have to return the favor before you leave office. And he was welcoming and gracious and everything. He came on our show last week before the NBA draft lottery. That didn't go so well. The lottery, that is. And then followed through with the interview for the Tribune.
Yeah, I thought our interview worked out fine.
Yeah, it worked out well. Yeah, it was great. Okay. He was on time and everything. And then I did Friday's interview for the Tribune, and we talked about a lot of things. And the one thing I'd led the column off with was funniest to me was what I remembered the most. He very interesting on a lot of different topics. But after we were done talking about the things that he wanted to cover and, look back at his 8 years in office and how sports played such a vital role in Chicago, as they always do, he was like, all right, now I got a couple questions for you. Like, what's wrong with the Cubs bullpen? How do they lose 2 out of 3 to Cincinnati? Isn't that embarrassing? And then, Cody Parkey, and they praise Ryan Pace. He's a sports fan. And I kiddingly called him and referred to him as Rahm from Ravenswood because he sounded like a lot of callers that we get in terms of just his take on the Cubs and the White Sox and the Bears. And that's what he is. He's a fan. He's not a guy that came into office as being, the fan in chief, so to speak. He wasn't like President Obama and filling out brackets and having, being that kind of a fan. But he had a passing interest that I think at times grew to be more than that. He's a Cub guy. And hearing him talk just about everything from his relationship with Rocky Wirtz, which has taken a turn negatively, and they don't have a great relationship now because of some things that have gone on politically. Also to the Chicago Fire, likely coming back to Chicago from Bridgeview as soon as next year, which isn't official yet, but you read the tea leaves and see that is coming. To his resistance to ever wanting public money to be spent on private sports stadiums, and his insistence that that not happen, and his involvement with Wrigley Field and the renovations and the concessions that were made. So yeah, it was a about 45 minutes in his office, and it was a fun interview.
And I like some of the stuff he said. I like the idea that, you know, were the Cubs really going to leave? No, that was just playing poker.
Yeah.
And
well, don't you remember that 2013?
Oh, yeah. I thought it was all playing poker too, but it's fun to hear a guy in the middle of the negotiation feel that way. And, you know, we know that there was some hard feelings from the people around the Ricketts family. Well, we've seen the emails, right?
So yes.
We know that they didn't like a lot that was going on there and wanted to get some public funding and felt that they were bringing in a lot of money to Chicago and deserved to get a break on some of the amusement tax stuff and all that. And Rom talks about them putting their own money into it and the amount of money they're making and the amount of money Chicago's making, and it's working out for everybody.
Well, I think that nobody disputes what that has done to the neighborhood, and,
sure.
and it's been
incredible.
Definitely an overall positive.
Yeah.
But I think his point was that the thing that he said, that, and I think he used it in his answer, that stood with me is like the taxpayers aren't there for a season. You know, their money is going to be there for a long time. And I think that he really felt like he was trying to protect the taxpayer in not devoting public money to these private stadium projects. He held firm when it came to Wrigley Field. There were concessions made with the neighborhood and zoning and things like that. But overall, no government money was used. And the same was true with the Blackhawks building the practice rink over on the west side by the United Center. And I think when you look at those two projects specifically, his point was, well, you know, they can afford to do this and they'll work in concert with them to do this because they're good investments in those neighborhoods, but he's not going to, you know, spend taxpayer money to do this. And he was very, very firm on that.
What was there anything that surprised you in his answers?
I think the surprise, well, a couple things. Number one, that he didn't have a strong opinion on sports gambling.
Yeah,
and
that
he felt like, you know, the legalization of sports gambling in Illinois is coming, or we sense that it could be coming as early as this month still.
Doesn't it almost have to come? Just because the need for revenue is so great?
Well, Governor Pritzker thinks so because he's earmarked $200 million in his next budget based on sports gambling and the revenue it'll generate. And Iowa became the 11th state last week to legalize sports gambling. But I was surprised. You asked me if I was surprised that Rahm Emanuel here, you know, the politician's politician, right, didn't have a really strong viewpoint on what that can do to the city, to the state, and in terms of revenue. And what he said was also that he didn't think that there was he hadn't thought about it as much, but I have tough emotional pulls on that. I don't see the corrosive social downside on sports gambling that I do on casinos.
What, if anything, do we know about Lori Lightfoot and her feelings on any of these subjects? I mean, the only thing I know about her is she's a Sox fan. Was she once a season ticket holder?
Yes. The only thing I know about her from a sports standpoint and perspective is that what you just said. She's a Sox fan, and she threw out the first pitch at both the Cubs and Sox home opener.
Right.
And no other mayor, I think, has done that. So
that's a
piece of history. But beyond that, I don't know. When Rahm came into office, we knew what. This is what I know from him from a sports standpoint. He was a dancer, right? He wasn't really an athlete necessarily except for being a dancer. And his favorite sport is boxing. Well, there's not a ton of, you know, and he liked the Cubs. That's pretty much what we knew. Beyond that, I don't think that he went out of his way to kind of, he wasn't that kind of, as I said earlier, he wasn't that kind of a fan. It was funny he likes power though, and he likes the clout that came with his job. So when he refers to Roger Goodell as Roger and Adam Silver as Adam, there's a purpose in that. He likes to throw around guys that he knows but in the first name basis and remind you that he's on their level. And he could call Roger Goodell on his cell phone. That was the funniest story when he told me.
Yeah.
You know, Roger Goodell's on his way to a Bears game and is at the height of his controversy where nobody wants to touch him. And he says, Roger, I will stand with you. I will walk with you. I'll drive you around, get to the game on time. I just want the draft here. And if you can promise me the draft will come here again in 2016, then I will stand behind you. And Goodell said, okay, fine. Now, is it more complicated than that? Absolutely. But that's the way Rahm remembers it, and that's the story that he wanted to tell, because it reinforced just how good of a relationship he felt like he had with the NFL commissioner.
Well, Roger Goodell, of course, his wife is from the Chicago area. Her family are all Bear fans. He's a New York guy himself, right? He's a senator's son. But happy wife, happy life. And I'm sure that bringing the draft here was great for the NFL, and it began a tour of it now. We've seen how popular it was in Nashville. And where's it heading? They're going to move it around a lot.
Dallas one year. Yeah. I'm not quite sure where it is next year. Philadelphia, possibly. It was there as well. As a soccer guy, did you think that his efforts – I guess that's the other thing that surprised me. It's very important to him to make sure that this happens at some point, or that he laid the groundwork for this to happen, for the Fire to leave Bridgeview and to come back to Chicago, because he felt like there was an opportunity at Soldier Field to take advantage of a fan base that it feels like is untapped.
Yeah, the NFL draft's moving to Vegas. It doesn't.
You're a soccer fan, but you're not necessarily an MLS fan.
Well, I'm more of a EPL fan, to be brutally honest with you. I'm a Man United fan, to be honest with you.
I was down really in Bridgeview the past couple days.
Let me tell you something.
Bear getting there and back.
But it's a beautiful stadium.
Gorgeous stadium.
And it is
such a hassle getting there.
It's a soccer stadium. Like, the problem that they had here is when the World Cup came to the U.S. in 1994, they should have required every city to have a soccer-only stadium. That's what they should have done. Mm-hmm. And then you could move that's before the league formed. You could move all these teams right into the stadium, and that would have been brilliant for that league. And it would have been a nice way of kind of paving the groundwork for it. Now, the idea of the Fire moving into Soldier Field, man, I don't know. That's like, I mean, what is the capacity of this, of the, their current stadium versus how big Soldier Field is? What are you going to do? Put curtains up to hide the fact that, you can't.
But you're not drawing 60,000 people.
You're not going to draw 60,000
people. Atlanta averages 53, but you're not Atlanta. You're not going to draw that kind of crowd here. What are you doing to the atmosphere? I'm not sure. Kevin, are you more inclined to go
to a great stadium,
a game?
For a game, if you're right on top of the action in Bridgeview. But you're right, Kevin, it's far away.
Such a hassle getting there and back. Saturday, we did, public transit.
Were you doing? You went to a Fire game?
No, of course not. There was a big music festival going on down there this weekend. Rascal Flatts did not appear. But
your loss.
We tried to do public transit Saturday, and it was a disaster. And then yesterday we drove, which was almost as big of a disaster with the congestion and the parking lot and the traffic and everything, despite the fact that the place is 20 miles from the city proper, practically. It's just it is a nice stadium, but it's so far out there that it's going to be hard to build anything there with the Fire, and it's probably a better idea to get them back into Soldier Field.
Yeah, I think so, because there's more people to draw from. Even if your atmosphere is a little bit different, you're going to have...
I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe it'll work out. I've been to many events there where they're not as... When that stadium's empty, it's tough. I wanted to tell you, I was in Mishawaka. I stayed in a
quit bragging.
Residence Inn in Mishawaka for my nephew's graduation. And I get on the elevator, and I'm wearing a T-shirt, which is Huddersfield Town T-shirt. And I get on the elevator, and this guy is looking at me, and he said, "Why are you wearing that shirt? Why aren't you wearing some of that Man United trash that you like?" He was a listener, and he said he was an Arsenal supporter, so he's one of Kevin's.
I was going to ask.
In Mishawaka?
David.
In Mishawaka, in the elevator.
International, wow. Baby.
Me, my three kids, my wife, and this guy and his wife.
I was going to ask David, was it a bigger honor going on Rahm Emanuel's podcast or the Screamers and Howlers
podcast?
That's
a tough one.
Yeah.
That is a tough one. I think that if I had to, I can't make my mind up. Maybe Screamers Howlers, because the questions were tougher.
Yeah. We really
appreciate
to you. All right.
No, but it was a great opportunity and a privilege to be able to talk sports with a guy on his last day in office.
That's really cool. Yeah. His last day in office, and you're up on the fifth floor. That's fantastic. Are you going to head over to see Lori Lightfoot when we're done with this show? Or
if the door is open, I don't know. I mean, what do you want to talk? We'll talk White Sox. Who's pitching tonight, Lori?
Well, you know what? Well, I don't know if the mayor knows, but I think Bruce Levine might
Bruce
have an
know.
Idea. We'll ask Bruce next. Mully and Hall on the Score.
Play ball!
Bruce Levine, 670, the Score baseball analyst.
It is all baseball.
32 years, baseball veteran reporter.
Bruce, I've known you for a number of years now.
Breaking stories faster than a herd of speeding turtles.
I like turtles. All right, you're great zombie.
Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine.
By the way, I loved you in The Wizard of Oz.
Bruce Levine.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Bruce Levine joins us on the St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Hotline, home of the real deal. Bruce, how
Morning,
are you,
Bruce.
Buddy?
Good morning. Interesting weekend of baseball, guys. Let's get going.
Well, can we start with who's going to start for the White Sox? Because that seems to be one of the great mysteries in life.
Well, you know what? They've been signing minor league AAA pitchers. And I don't, honestly, over the last week or 10 days, they've signed a couple of guys. And honestly, we haven't heard of
some guy from the Reds, right? That might
start. Oh, Sommer Despaigne.
Yeah, Despaigne. So that appears to be a possible way they're going here. I mean, unless they come up with a long man or a bullpen day, you know, right away here, I don't know. I mean, we kept asking Ricky Renteria over the weekend exactly who it's going to be, and he didn't have any idea. Even after the game yesterday, he was still putting us off. So. We'll find out when they start this afternoon, but it is certainly an interesting situation with the White Sox right now.
What are the plans for Eloy Jimenez this week, Bruce, and how big do you think this week is with the Astros and the Twins in succession?
Well, it's it's certainly an interesting time for the White Sox because they've been hovering around 500, and they're trying to prove that they're a decent team. Now they're going to have a chance to do it against Houston and against Minnesota, two first-place teams, two very good teams. But with Jimenez, they feel, he got through the weekend okay. I asked Renteria yesterday, when he comes back, is he an outfielder or DH? He said, well, he's been playing the outfield, but I will pick my spots for Jimenez. In other words, he might be out there in the outfield for a day or two. He might sit on the bench for a day. They're going to really watch it, try to make sure that this thing is not only healed but full strength as they get their hands back on him. And he goes through a lot of drills. You know, the outfield instructor, Daryl Boston, is going to be working with him again significantly before games just to make sure he's ready and that there's no reoccurrence of this injury.
It's a collision of the past and the present at Wrigley with Jake Arrieta returning to town and, of course, Yu Darvish.
Who would you rather have?
That's what we were discussing a little bit. I wonder, and I mean this sincerely, Bruce, would we be – if Jake were a 500 pitcher right now making big coin and everybody having great expectations, would all that he achieved in the past make it so that no one criticized him, or would he be – and maybe he wouldn't be a 500 pitcher if he had the Cubs behind him. I don't know what the answer is, but had they signed him, how would we feel about it right now?
You know, he's a six-inning pitcher now. He's a different guy. And I think it's a great conversation because of the fact that, he comes in with a 500 record, a 4 ERA for this year, under 500 record for the 2 years and the 40 starts that he's made for the Phillies with a 14-15 record. So from all of that, it would be a lot easier for the Cubs and Arrieta because of the fact that he had done so much here. When you go away and you try to earn that contract and you try to earn it in front of a new fan base that's expecting more, it's a lot different. That said, the contract is short. The Phillies only have another year after this commitment. They have 2 years on an option to whether they want to pick it up or not. So the commitment is $75 million as opposed to the $126 million for Darvish. So you know, you can slice it or dice it either way. I think there's disappointment on either way that you look at it.
Yeah, there is, Bruce. I think, and I've said earlier that I think the decision to sign Darvish was, it turns out to be one that they may regret, but the decision to, you know, not pay Arrieta what he felt like he was worth was sort of independent of that. I don't know that it was either or at the time looking back, but the question nobody can answer is, would the Cubs have been better off in 2018, I'm sorry, would their season have ended differently if Jake Arrieta would have been in that rotation every fifth day?
Yeah, it's hard to say because, you know, again, under 500 pitcher, he made
with
31
starts. With the Phillies,
starts,
though, how would he have been with the Cubs? That's the thing that's hard to answer because
I don't know.
You just don't know.
Yeah. That's difficult to say. I think, you know, would do a Dennis Green. He is who he is right now. You know, that's where he's at. He's not any different. I mean, you know, he's got great support right now. He's a 500 pitcher. You know, maybe with a better bullpen, you're right. Maybe he has a better record with the Cubs last year. I don't know, but I can tell you what, coming off of Darvish's last start, there's a lot to be enthusiastic about. The one thing he has to do, 11 strikeouts, no walks, that was great. But the 100 pitches have to go into the sixth or seventh inning. It can't be five and a third because he has been killing the bullpen, okay? You cannot have, you know, four innings every time that he goes out there from the bullpen. So he has to find a way to get earlier contact. He's got to find a way that it's not 100 pitches in five innings because this is even, you know, and again, we're talking about a good start where he let up a couple runs and he struck out 11 and walked nobody. That's a great start. But again, you have to go in the sixth or seventh inning. He's paid to be a seven-inning pitcher, and he has not been able to do that yet.
Bruce, Javi Baez has a heel issue, left the game in the sixth inning with sore going in. Does he play tonight?
It's a good question, Mike. You know, you look at the replay, and I watched it. I'm sure you guys did, a number of times as well. Looks like all of his weight is on that right leg, you know, and then he comes down on that heel, and they're calling it a heel injury right now rather than an ankle. But nonetheless, he, correct me if I'm wrong, but no days off, right, for Javier Baez?
He
needed a day or two.
Right.
I mean, you know, so I would say no, he's not playing tonight. You know, I don't see that. I think, you know, they know that he needed some time anyway. So hopefully it's not significant. There were no reports out of there saying he was significant, and he'll be reevaluated today, I'm sure. But this would be a good time to give him a day or two off. Russell, you know, right away was pretty rusty there from the throwing angle that he made, but that's why you have Addison Russell. That's why when you think twice about making trades and people, you know, flippantly talk about moving Addison Russell, injuries occur, and then who would play shortstop for an extended period of time on the Cubs if Baez went down?
Will Steve Cishek be out tonight and for a couple of nights? Do you think that was wise to use him 2 1/3?
Well, he was great, wasn't he?
Yeah,
I mean,
he
saved. He literally came up with an old-time save for the Chicago Cubs. That was a Lee Smith. That was a Goose Gossage. That was a, you know, a Raleigh Fingers type save, and he was great. But he won't be able to be out there tonight. And you know, as I've been writing on 670thescore.com over the last couple of days, and I talked to Toronto closer Ken Giles yesterday, the Cubs are out there looking for that closer. And he is one of, you know, the four guys. You know, I have, you know, Colum is on that list, Shane Green of Detroit, Will Smith of the Giants. These are guys.
Doolittle?
Well, maybe. I mean, I haven't heard his name, but, you know, if Washington's in that mix there, and how many more weeks or is it a month or two before Washington decides they might have to pivot? I don't know. But, again, these are serious, individuals that they're looking at right now. And they have to come in with that one more guy. They have a good bullpen. These are seasoned guys, and they are very good in their roles, but they need that lockdown guy.
Alex Colome, Bruce, I don't know what you're giving him, but that sounds good. Another Aloy, another Cease, something
like that. He might be starting tonight.
Spoken like a true White Sox fan, Mike.
Thanks, yeah. Bruce. Good stuff.
Thanks, Bruce. See
all
you,
right, guys. Have a great day.
That is Bruce Levine, the Scores baseball expert.
Do you want Mike Montgomery?
Yeah. Jeez. I want all of them.
I wouldn't trade him for the Cubs, though.
Yeah. Well, yeah, David wants him starting.
Yeah. Depends on his win-loss record.
Well, the win-loss thing, I think what he's saying, when you call someone a 500 pitcher, you're saying he's just another guy. He's not the star that he once was. You know, don't confuse a guy defining a pitcher as a 500 pitcher with thinking that record matters more than other elements. I think he's just saying when Jake left here, he was a star and he was a Cy Young candidate. And when he.
It's an average guy.
Yes, that's
a guy.
Yeah, I think what Molly's saying, Kevin, is you're a metric snob.
I wouldn't disagree with that. And as far as Jake being a six inning pitcher now, I think that's pretty fair too. But Darvish is like a three.
Darvish is a 5-inning pitcher. Yeah, exactly.
He takes six.
4 2/3.
Like a Giolito awesome. 5-inning complete game would be a godsend.
We take sometimes players for granted, like Javi Baez. He made two exceptional plays. What happens if Russell Addison makes that play? Maybe a completely different inning.
Molly and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670, the score. That was the Alex Rodriguez from the ESPN telecast last night calling Addison Russell. Russell Addison?
Yeah,
what happens if Russell Addison makes that play?
It's a reflection on how far his star is.
So you think it's more
a
reflection on
Addison Russell? Great.
You think it's more a reflection on A-Russ than A-Rod?
I think he just misspoke. Okay. But it's fun to listen to because it's A-Rod and he's unpopular.
He didn't misspeak, yeah.
He misspoke. We do
polarizing.
It all the time.
Alex Rodriguez is better in the studio providing analysis than he is in the booth. But I think sometimes that...
He's better with a one-on-one interview with a guy like Chris Bryant because he's a respected figure in the game. Players will actually talk to him. His interview with Chris Bryant about hitting, whatever that was, a year ago or 2 years ago, was fantastic because it's A-Rod who knows what he's doing, talking to a guy who also knows what he's doing and a guy who trusts that A-Rod knows what he's talking about.
I like
about.
That stuff. I like
I
that
do
stuff.
Too.
I like when he incorporates his experiences into the broadcast. I think he sometimes brings a lot of insight that way. I wish last night he would have gone, for instance, when they were talking about throwing at batters and getting hit by pitches and how unpopular he was. Remember when Chris Bryant took the shot? Oh my gosh, it looked like it hurt, right on mm-hmm. Right on the thigh.
Yep.
And they were talking about A-Rod being unpopular. I wish they would have thought about They mentioned even Ryan Dempster being a guy that Kyle Hendricks had used as sort of a mentor and had given him tips that he gleaned from Greg Maddux. And at that point, I thought, okay, they're going to bring up the Ryan Dempster threw at A-Rod in the first game back from suspension experience because that was classic. That was classic what they were talking about, throwing at A-Rod for being A-Rod. And they didn't. They passed him. But I do like when he introduces things.
Because they don't want to mention suspension. That's but part of the problem.
Probably
is
so.
They just don't want to mention, like, shh, don't mention the steroids. I mentioned it once, but I got away with it. They just don't want that coming out.
It was such a loosey-goosey era.
Because it was a loosey-goosey era.
It was.
Because they were so young.
But this was the third straight game as week that on a Sunday night, the ESPN crew called the Cubs game. And
yes.
Their familiarity, I thought, began to take hold or at least pay off.
Yes.
I felt like the insight they provided last night was better at times than we've seen in the two previous Sundays. I liked what they had to say about, for instance, Anthony Rizzo, the way that he, you know, crowds or the way that he has changed his approach at the plate and where he stands in the box from 2012 to now, 2019, 7 years later.
When you see that, you'll also see how much over the plate. I mean, he's at the batter's box, and a visual for the pitcher is, where do I go inside? Very little room.
2-2 to Rizzo is hammered to the opposite field. Soto's back, and it's gone!
So, guys, they try to get inside to Anthony Rizzo, and this is part of where crowding the plate just helps you so much as a hitter. It takes away. Look at where Suzuki set up. Look at where he misses. Guys, this pitch now becomes such a fat strike. It's continuing to sink and run away from his bat because of Rizzo's location. That ball becomes a pitch that he can get on barrel and drive out of the park to left field.
And he gets hit a lot. He gets hit more than anyone on the Cubs because he's standing on the plate. And I think that if I'm pitching to him, and again, you know, if I pitched to him, he would hit like a 800 home run. But if you're pitching to him, not you, Well, if you Darvish were
pitching. It was very loose.
Okay.
If anyone professionally is pitching to him, you have to pitch inside. You have to make him back up.
True.
And if you hit him, you hit him.
Yes, but.
You have to do that. And then you complain that he's standing on the plate.
What perfect timing, though, to make that point and how pitchers struggle to throw inside and they let one float on the outside and he goes the opposite way and he hits a home run.
But you don't think that was coincidence? You think that's because they did two other broadcasts?
No, I think that they have seen him a lot. How are we going to look at Anthony Rizzo differently this Sunday night than we did in previous two Sundays? They talk about things that maybe are always there, obvious to people that watch the Cubs every day. But I think that was well timed.
Can I say this without sounding like I'm criticizing them?
Sure.
I honest to God, I just think if you are doing a broadcast like that, you've got so much information, so many people feeding you facts. I don't think that's them. That's their support staff that came up with that. I don't think that Jessica Mendoza noticed it.
But if they don't provide it, you're going to criticize them for having nothing.
Listen, I'm not criticizing them. I'm not the guy that wrote a story in the paper about how, you know, can we please drag these people behind a car? I didn't disagree with it necessarily. I don't like them coming in every week. But you make a good point, which is they probably have learned a lot about this team by being around it as much as they have, and it's not out of town stupid anymore. It's just not the greatest broadcast. I'd rather just have a normal broadcast.
I'm not suggesting it's the greatest broadcast.
What did you think of Joe Girardi?
I thought it was improved. I thought Joe Girardi is a professional, and we're going to talk to him at 8:00.
What did you think of him and Len?
I felt like, they have not worked together a lot before, but I thought they were very good. I didn't see as much of that game. I taped it. I didn't watch as much of that game as I did last night's game.
How would you feel if Joe Girardi ended up replacing JD on the Cubs network?
On the Marquee network?
Is that possible?
I don't think that was an audition, but I believe that Joe Girardi...
Are they paying that kind of money to get a Joe
I don't know, but if Joe Girardi wants to manage, he'll be a good manager. If Joe Girardi wants to be an analyst, he'll be a good analyst. He's going to be good at whatever he chooses to do.
Would they give him like a $5 million retainer just to have him on the broadcast until he takes over behind the...
I don't see that happening.
In the dugout.
I don't see that happening. I still don't
How
know
do
what's going
to
happen.
How do we handle this? How do we ask Joe if he's on his way to Chicago? Do we claim it's as a broadcaster, or do we?
I don't think
ask
that's.
I don't think
that question's in play this time.
We can't wait to see what's next.
I think that was a question you asked, and I think we did in April in spring training when there was more uncertainty about how the Cubs would start and what that would do to Joe Maddon's status. I don't think that's an issue right now.
Okay, so Joe's status is yet to be determined.
Joe's status is the fact the Cubs are playing not as good as they possibly could play.
Oh, they're pretty close.
They responded. Okay, they responded, and they responded in part because of Joe Maddon's presence and the way that he handled the situation. I don't think Joe Maddon's status is appropriate to address at this point. They're a first place team. He's a reason they're there.
I'm just saying, if you look at Joe and his situation, it still feels like World Series or bust, regardless of how well they're playing now, regardless of whether he's getting along with everybody and he's pulling all that. It's going to come down to how they do come playoff time to determine whether he's back.
Don't disagree with that, but that's a different question. The question is right now, May 20th, is it appropriate to ask Joe Girardi how he feels about speculation about his job status and taking the Cubs job? I don't think it is, because I don't think it's fair. Because I don't think it's an issue.
It's not fair to him, and it's not fair to Joe. It's not an issue now. It's not going to be one. All right.
And I think if it is, you're manufacturing it. Because
I'm not manufacturing.
No, I'm not saying you. I'm saying you in the general sense.
You Darvish.
Okay. Yeah, he's manufacturing it. Because, look, everybody knows that is the undercurrent of speculation when you're talking about a Cubs next manager. Who's it going to be? Well, if it's not Joe Maddon, then Joe Girardi is going to be a guy on the top of many guys' list. But you're not there yet. And I think to constantly harp on that, to me, misses the point. The point is the Cubs are pretty good, and they responded well. And they're heading into a series now that, you know, tonight is about Jake Arrieta, and this is a first-place team.
Listen, this is a first-place team. Tonight is Jake's... It's about you, Darvish, but Jake Arrieta. It's a great fan game. But, you are the guy that wrote, it's time to give Joe a contract extension.
Absolutely.
We talked to Theo about it, and he basically said, basically, we talked before the year that we're not talking about. There's no plan to do what you proposed. So if that is the case, then isn't there uncertainty with Joe's future just by the nature of the fact that he's running out of contract? As much as we ignore it and it doesn't matter now and they're not going to fire him in season, I think everyone knows that.
It's a big picture issue. I don't think it's a daily concern.
Okay. That's fair.
Look, and maybe I'm wrong, and maybe that's the wrong way to view this when you're sitting in this seat and you're talking into this microphone, but I just don't see that as a daily issue. It's something.
It's not. It's not an issue now because Joe's going to take this team to the playoffs. Okay?
Well, it looks that way, and we know, we've heard from Theo.
11 games into the year or whatever it was, there was a question of whether they were going to make the playoffs.
Absolutely.
Or what was going to happen.
And in spring training and on opening day, I think we made a talk to Joe Girardi, and maybe soon after that. When they were struggling, Joe Madden's status was an issue. Then when they responded and so well to the point where they were a first-place team again, I felt like it was an issue whether or not they should extend his contract, because as a reward for, hey, you got us off to the good start, you responded to the urgency, let's talk about next year. Theo Epstein shot that down.
I'm not trying to fire Jim DeShays, okay? So people are taking this the wrong way. It was curious to have Joe do the game, but he did it with Len, because Len, maybe is Len going to Fox? Maybe we should ask it that way. We'll ask Len the next time we talk
to him.
Let's
do that.
Yeah.
That'll go over well.
I went the wrong way. I should have gone,
let's go over that.
Are they losing Len?
I was just trying to point out that the ESPN crew wasn't so bad. And we got into Joe Girardi replacing Madden.
It was very loose.
Yeah, I'm not saying that they were. I didn't think they were that bad to begin with. I did think it was tiresome that they were doing three consecutive Sunday night games. It was just kind of like, come on, can't we just get back to normal? It's what month is it? May?
I think they're on tomorrow night. I mean, I don't think this crew, but I think they're on ESPN tomorrow night, Tuesday night.
It happens.
Yeah, it's a 6:05.
But listen on the score.
That's good. 6:05.
Because I think
Zach
Zeman's filling in one night this week for Pat
Two
Hughes.
Nights this week.
Two nights this week. Pat Hughes is taking a well-deserved vacation.
I don't think you should be trying to run Pat Hughes out.
I'm not. Mr. David. You're the one running the shades out of town.
I did not. Okay. It was taken the wrong way.
Joe Girardi's next.
312-644-6767. If you got problems with this, we'll talk to you after Joe. But Joe is next. Mully and Hall on the score.
It was such a loosey-goosey era.
From executive producer Jimmy Kimmel.
What's up, team? Just two people can't launch a brand. It takes a village.
We are MMD Hollywood.
Wowee.
Which stands for medical marijuana.
Due to restrictions, we can't tell you everything about our new reality series. But what we can say is the idea behind it is fully baked.
I don't know.
High Hopes. Streaming 420 on Hulu.